would I? They were only servants.
Chapter 14. Kestra. It was strange to be here again after 3 years. The house itself looked exactly as it always had, yet it wasn't the same at all. It wasn't the house, of course. I had changed. The first 13 years of my life had been spent here, existing under my father's rules, where one did not speak until spoken to first, where an accidental cough at dinner was considered unpardonable, and where, aside from Lord Endrick alone, my father ruled his world. Even the cut flowers seemed to bow to him when he walked the halls. Since going to the lava fields, I'd eaten beside my servants, because it was preferable to eating alone. Darrow had taught me to ride astride, and Cook showed me how to gut the fish Darrow and I used to catch from Unknown Lake. At best, rules were a suggestion, and no one cared when I broke them. Except my handmaidens, of course. But none of them lasted long enough to re-civilize me. As Gerald led me into the east wing of Woodcourt, he said, "You've been away for a long time, my lady. Do you feel you are coming back a stranger?" No, I was coming back a traitor, which was much worse. And I'd always felt like a stranger here. That was true today more than ever before. I was seeing my home like a forgotten memory, unknown and familiar at the same time. Most rooms bore dark wood-paneled walls and tiled floors with thick rugs that I used to roll myself in as a child. On the plastered walls in the grand entry, artists had painted scenes of Dalazor family history, though I wondered how many of those were exaggerated in my family's favor to earn the artist extra gold for his work. Surely not all of us were as bold or as handsome as the paintings made us appear. I knew for a fact that before her death, my grandmother Dalazor had more closely resembled a walrus than the painting in front of me depicted. Since I hadn't answered Gerald's last question, he changed the topic. "Your father is waiting for you in the library. Did you know he's read every book the library holds? A brilliant man, your father." That was the most energy I could muster for this conversation. When he was home, my father spent most of his time in the library, perhaps because its civilization stood in such stark contrast to Endrick's torture chambers, the other place my father frequented. The library was 2 stories tall, filled floor to ceiling with books. If a satin-covered diary was still here in Woodcourt, then it was probably somewhere in this room. Gerald knocked to announce our presence, then opened the door. "Sir Henry, your daughter is here." I was given permission to enter, and saw my father seated at his desk, reading from a thick marble slab known as a tablet. All Dalazor families had one, as would most loyalists and traitors. It was one method by which Endrick sent his orders throughout the country, as messages or images would appear on the tablet at his pleasure. Whatever my father was reading now was obviously more interesting than the daughter he'd not seen for 3 years. My father hadn't changed much in that time. He did appear older than he should have. He was near Darrow's age, yet had the face of an elder. He also looked harder than I remembered. Any warmth in his expression deadened since our last meeting. The lines around his mouth were creased with sadness, making me sad too. Despite who I knew him to be, no daughter wishes to see so much regret in her father's eyes. Was it too late for him? Or for us? I drew a deep breath and held it, unsure of whether I wanted those questions answered. Finally, he glanced up, appraising me with all the generosity of a miser on his last coin.
"You look well, though a little untidy."
If he wouldn't show any affection, then neither would I. "I've been traveling since early yesterday morning."
"Yes, but then you were never one to fuss with your appearance. That must change now, Kestra. You are not a child anymore."
"My travels here were an adventure, thank you for asking, but the past 3 years of my life went well, if you were wondering." He frowned.
"Of course they did. I'd have heard if anything was wrong."
"Such as a small garrison of his men having been killed?" No doubt Gerald would give him the report later today. I shifted my weight to the other foot, a
hoping it wouldn't be perceived as my growing impatience with this conversation. Although that was exactly the problem. Why did you bring me home again? All I got was a message demanding that I return by today. He leaned back in his seat, touching a finger to his lips.
My reasons should have been obvious. You finally agreed to my terms.
To a marriage of alliance? I'm not 17 yet. Is this a joke?
He grunted. You did agree, Kestra. You sent a letter through your handmaiden, telling me you'd had enough of the lava fields and would agree to wed the person of my choice.
My hands curled into fists. I sent no such letter. Does it sound like me to have made such a stupid concession? He stood, thrusting his chair back with enough force to leave a crack in the plaster of his library wall.
It sounded like you had finally grown up, that you were willing to accept your duty as a Dalasaur.
Agreeing to marry someone I may not like, a person I don't even know, is not a sign I've grown up. The fact that I've grown up is evidenced in the fact that I don't have to subjugate my happiness to your desire for power. I will not do this. My father marched around his desk and grabbed my arm, hard enough that I suspected it would leave a bruise. Then he all but threw me out of his library, where Gerald was waiting in the hall. No doubt he had heard every word of our fight.
Tell her maid to dress her like a proper lady, and to have her at supper tonight, where she will meet Sir Basil of Redengrad, and charm him if she knows what's good for her. She will not eat until then. If she does not attend, she will never eat again.
Gerald bowed, and then waved a hand to motion me ahead of him down the corridor. I didn't look back at either him or the library as I walked, and not from defiance or conceit. It's only that I didn't want anyone to see the tears so thick in my eyes they nearly blinded me. Simon and Trina could talk all they wanted about the privileges of being a Dalasaur, of how I was so much better off than they were. They had no idea what they were talking about. A true privileged life had nothing to do with the softness of bed sheets, with the spread of food on a table. It would have meant I still had a mother to welcome me home, and a father who cared more for my happiness than for his personal ambitions. My room was on the upper floor at the end of the West Wing, literally as far from my father's apartments as he could place me without requiring me to sleep on a perch outside. Trina had a hot bath waiting for me there, and was putting the finishing touches of a warm meal on a table in my old room. It would have been easier to accept my punishment if that food had all the aroma of a barn floor, but sadly it didn't. Woodcourt cooks were second only to those who served Endric, and could spin delicacies from straw if necessary. Trina curtsied to Gerald when he entered, like a proper handmaiden would, and when he acknowledged it, he said,
"The lady's father has ordered that she is not to eat until she agrees to attend a supper with him tonight. You will enforce those orders with absolute strictness."
"Of course." A wicked smile crossed Trina's face. "It's a pity to see this lovely meal go to waste. I could eat it, I suppose. My lady hasn't fed me as well as she should have." I exhaled a stiff breath, loud enough that if I were convicted of treason one day, at least Gerald would know I'd already been sufficiently punished.
"You may eat it this once," Gerald said. "But remember, she is your mistress, not the other way around."
In any other circumstance, Trina would have argued that. But now, she immediately sat down, attacking the food like it was her first meal in months. She must have been hungry, for most people outside the Dominion didn't like the spicy way we prepared our food, or the expense of the spices, perhaps. Gerald remained in the room long enough to assure himself that she wasn't going to share with me. If only he knew how unnecessary his concern was. Trina would lick the plate before letting me have a crumb. I didn't care. Or at least, I tried not to care. I spent most of the time pretending I couldn't hear the smack of her mouth as she ate, instead reacquainting myself with my old room. The walls had once been lined with golden fabrics, though I'd heard that Lord Endric banned the use of gold cloth for anyone but himself. My other furnishings were still here. A bed, a writing desk, a reclining sofa, yet the things I'd cared most about were gone. On a shelf in the corner, the rock collection I'd spent years gathering had disappeared. An autumn leaf, plucked from a tree the day my mother died, was nowhere to be found. Whatever clothes I'd left behind when my father rushed me away were gone too, though that was understandable. I'd grown taller in the last 3 years. I'd grown up. "The water will be cold by the time you get around to bathing me," I told Trina, who was finishing the last of the boiled meat on her plate.
"Probably.
Let's do it now."
"Do it yourself, brat. I'm not your servant."
"Here at Woodcourt, you are." She tossed her head upward, hard enough that I wondered if she'd cracked her neck.
"I am superior to you, Kestra Dalasor, in ways you cannot imagine. I should be the one having a bath, not you."
"As you wish." I marched over to the large basin that had been placed in the center of my room. It was nearly full of water, and the soaps and rinse water buckets were set out on a nearby stool. I put a leg up on the edge of the basin, aware of Trina's eyes on me. By the time she realized what I intended to do, it was too late.
"Don't you dare!"
she cried, leaping to her feet. I pressed my foot down, and with it came the entire basin. An avalanche of water splashed into the room, soaking everything on the floor, and probably already leaking through the floorboards into the servants' quarters below.
"You are so clumsy today!"
I told Trina as I opened the door to my room, spilling even more water into the hallway.
"Since you're my servant, why don't you clean up this mess and draw me a new bath? I'm going for a walk."
There would be consequences for what I'd done, no doubt. But whatever they were, as far as I was concerned, it was entirely worth it.
Chapter 15. Simon. After a fair amount of searching, I finally found Kestra in the gardens behind Woodcourt, about the farthest she could run without leaving the gates. She was lucky it took so long to find her. Even a minute sooner and I would have stormed in loud enough for the whole estate to hear. She turned to see me, then folded her arms and faced away, suddenly fascinated by a nearby rose bush. She could try her best to ignore me, but it wouldn't work. "It took every servant in the household to get that cleaned up." I wasn't yelling, but my tone was just as harsh. "All that because Trina wouldn't help you bathe? Go away." She started to walk deeper into the gardens. I crossed in front of her, refusing to let her escape so easily. "You are spoiled and selfish to the core. How dare you compromise our plan?" "It's your plan!" She spat the words out, suddenly as angry as I was. "Not mine! None of this is what I want. I shouldn't be here." "Well, you are. And you know the consequences if you try to betray us." She snorted out a laugh. "The consequences to Darrow, who arranged a meeting for me with the banished last night? Or the consequences to Celia? Tell me this. When did Celia first betray me?" I stopped, unsure of how to answer. Kestra was not supposed to have figured this out. In the face of my silence, she continued. "Celia sent a letter here, agreeing on my behalf to accept a marriage of alliance. That's why I was summoned back home. Not because anyone missed me, or cared about my well-being, or whether filthy Korak rebels abducted me on the way home to force me into treason." "Hush!" I did a quick survey of the area, then stepped closer. "You knew I'd be on that road last night, and at what time? Celia arranged all of it, didn't she?" There was nothing to be gained by lying. I said, "6 months ago, Celia was in town shopping for fabric. Probably because you wanted a fancy new dress, right?" She struck up a conversation with the clerk, not realizing he was a Korak. The clerk figured out who Celia must have been working for and contacted Tengger. It took some persuasion, but she finally agreed to our plans. "Persuasion? Was that in the form of a threat or a reward?" There was no good way to answer that. "Both, I suppose." She took a breath, hesitating on her question. "Last night, when Tengger was forcing me to agree to his terms, were her screams real? Or was she only pretending to be hurt so that I'd agree?" "Celia didn't have a scratch on her, and was a better actress than we could have hoped for. But Kestra didn't have to know that, nor was she in control of this conversation. Celia doesn't matter. What do you suppose will happen if your father discovers you've brought two Koraks inside the walls of his home? Not by choice! But you still did it. He won't protect you. He doesn't care for you. I understand now why your father sent you away in the first place. I instantly regretted my words. They had come out colder than I'd intended and hit her deep. Her lower lip quivered before she pushed past me and began marching out of the gardens. I followed close behind, calling her name and getting nothing in response. At the entrance, she nearly collided with Gerald. That was no coincidence. Obviously, he was there for Kestra and didn't seem at all happy to be the one sent to fetch her. Cautiously, he said, "My lady, your father requests that you return to his library at once." She folded her arms again. "Nothing has changed since our conversation an hour ago. Your handmaiden claims it was you who overturned the bath, that it was not her fault. Your father believes she is only saying that to save herself from a whipping. He wants to hear your answer." Kestra released a deep breath, then followed Gerald back into the manor house. I continued to follow them, hoping no one would stop me, and hoping even more that if they did, Kestra would cover for me. After my final words to her, I had my doubts. I was the last to enter the library and stood in the doorway, eyes down. When I served here, I'd never taken orders directly from Sir Henry, but he would have seen me in the home. As much as possible, I'd have to avoid him. Trina was farther inside, her hands bound in front of her with rough cording and her yellow dress ripped at the shoulder. A guard standing beside her had a stiff rod in his hands, ready to deliver a brutal punishment. Trina had gone so pale that I wondered if she was about to faint. When she saw Kestra, she cried, "Talk to your father! Tell him the truth, please!" Sir Henry was standing in the center of the library, arms folded, and with a face the approximate color of a ripened plum. Not good. Kestra crossed her arms and stared off at the shelves. It obviously wasn't the first time she and her father had faced each other this way. He finally erupted, at a volume high enough that the Northern Territories could surely hear him. "Water seeped beneath the floorboards, Kestra. It wouldn't surprise me if it all must be torn out and replaced." I'd seen the damage myself. It was worse than that. Some of the furniture was spoiled. Heirloom pieces that had probably been there for ages. A couple of rugs were ruined, too. Kestra barely reacted and only kept her eyes grazing along the shelves. Was this about the diary that Trina had told her to find? If so, then Kestra's timing was awful.
"Look at me!" Sir Henry ordered, and Kestra did. "Your servant claims you overturned the bath, that you did it out of spite and anger. I told her that Dalasaurs have enough dignity to never do such a thing.
Tell me she is lying, Kestra. Surely you have matured enough that you would not willfully cause damage to my home." His voice sharpened to a fine point, making sure she understood his full meaning. "Be bold enough to assign blame onto your servant, and perhaps I will let you miss tonight's supper with Sir Basil." Trina mumbled Kestra's name, her voice quivering with fear. But Kestra's attention had returned to the shelves. Most books in this library were very old, some of them probably dating back to the times when books were largely unknown in the world. Trina had described the diary we were seeking as being covered in pink satin, but nothing I saw came close to fitting that description. I doubted it was as important as Trina had made it out to be anyway. Who'd be foolish enough to write down the secret location of the Olden Blade, risking discovery by Lord Endrick? With Kestra's silence, the guard reached for Trina's damaged sleeve, preparing to bear her back. Kestra sighed, as if she'd grown tired of the conversation. "Stop this, father. You know I'm the one who did it."
"That's irrelevant!"
He stepped closer until he towered over her.
"Do Dalasaurs let harm come to themselves, or do we bring it to others?"
"Maybe if Dalasaurs were less concerned with bringing harm to others, Antora would be a better place to live. The people hate us."
"Are you more concerned with what the people think?"
His tone darkened.
"Or what I think of you?"
Remembering what I had said to her in the gardens, my eyes shifted to Kestra. Her breaths became shallow, and her lashes fluttered as she tried to hold her stare at her father. No wonder my words had hurt her. She wanted his love. He wanted her respect. Neither of them would be the first to budge. Finally, Kestra took Trina's arm and walked her over to Gerald. Take her to my room and help her draw another bath. I have a supper to attend tonight. My lady, he began. What happened was my fault. Kestra's tone was commanding. Get her out of here, Gerald, now! Trina glanced at me as Gerald led her out, leaning heavily on his arm. I'd known she was afraid of that rod, but not the full depth of her fear. As soon as she was gone, Kestra faced her father, as defiant as before. He didn't appreciate his daughter taking responsibility for the bathwater, but once she did, he wasn't likely to punish Trina. Kestra might not be so lucky. May I go? She asked. Sir Henry's eyes narrowed. You chose a servant over your own father. There are consequences for your disrespect. Put out your hand. A flick of his head brought his guard forward with the rod. Instinctively, I gripped my knife. But as soon as the guard noticed, I released the handle. I had to. If Kestra took notice of the exchange, she didn't acknowledge it. She walked up to her father and held out her hand, using the same indifferent attitude she had attempted with Tengger in the carriage. Sir Henry took it, drawing back the sleeve enough to ensure she would fully feel the sting on her palm. In doing so, he saw the sores on her wrists, still red and swollen, his brows pressed together. Where did these come from? From the same girl he had wanted to punish, ironically. If he would whip Trina for overturning the bath, I could easily imagine what would happen if she were exposed for tying Kestra up last night. That was my fault as well. I hadn't tied Kestra's wrists, but I'd allowed it, wanting her to know what it felt like. How selfish that had been. How cruel. Kestra only shrugged. We were attacked at the inn last night, on our way here. Who did this? Do you care? She licked her lips. I mean, do you care for me? I care about any attack on a Dalasaur. Was it Korax? What did they want? He missed Kestra's meaning deliberately, I thought. Sir Henry would rather discuss anything but his feelings for his daughter. If he had any feelings for her. I'd had two fathers in my life. The one I was born to. The other who took me in and adopted me. Both were great men, whose lives had ended too soon. In half the lifetime of Sir Henry, they had felt 10 times the love a father should have for his child. Kestra ignored her father's question, instead retorting with, Most people out there think that being a Dalasaur is enough reason to attack us. Why is that? Can we have that conversation, father? About the real reasons people hate us? He studied the sores again, noting with his finger the difference between the cut from Trina's knife and the sores gouged into the skin from the rope. Finally, he released his daughter's hand, as if it had burned him. Cover these for the supper tonight with Sir Basil, and have your handmaiden apply healing creams to them. That will be enough punishment for the bathwater. I won't have you meeting your future husband with your palms bandaged, too. Agreed? Kestra pressed her lips tightly together. It was obvious that all her strength was going into containing her temper. Agreed.
Chapter 16 Kestra. Trina was alone in my room when I entered. Simon was probably itching to be here to see how these next few minutes unfolded, but, of course, his presence in a lady's bedroom would never be tolerated. The large basin for my bath was upright again, and filled with steaming water that beckoned me closer. I paused, trying to figure out what Trina meant by all of this. Was it a show for Gerald, expecting he would accompany me here? Was she going to tempt me toward the water and then use the bath herself instead? Trina stood when I entered. The ropes around her wrists were gone, and she had been given a new dress with a handmaiden's apron, much humbler than the yellow one of mine she had been wearing. She looked more the part of a servant now, and seemed to feel the difference, which must have been humiliating. She had joined the Korax to fight and find glory in disrupting the peace. Not to help bathe an arrogant and spoiled Dalasaur daughter. That much about me was true. I said nothing to her, and she remained silent too. She only shut the door, then crossed behind me to unlace my dress. Once I was in the bath, I closed my eyes and let the worst of the day wash away from me. Not even on the coldest winter night had warm waters given me such comfort. Trina undid my braids and let the hair fall outside the tub, then brushed it out, all in silence. I mumbled that I would wash my own hair and reached for the soaps before she could say anything, if she would have. When I'd finished and dried myself off, I realized for the first time that all of my gowns had been left behind at the inn, except the blue one, which was dirty and smelled of our travels. Trina's eyes were cast down when she said, "Your father had a new gown waiting up here, in anticipation of your supper tonight. I'll get it." The gown had a black shift with narrow sleeves that widened at the wrists, an off-the-shoulder green corset that laced up the back, and a long green sash that tied at the waist. Endrick's colors. Considering that my father could not have known how much I'd grown in the last few years, once Trina helped me into it, the dress fit remarkably well. Maybe Celia had sent him my measurements. She was certainly telling people everything else about me. "Gerald's blue condition," I said. "You can't stare at it like you did before. You're a servant, and he is your superior here at Woodcourt." "I know that. I just wasn't expecting. He probably used to live near the silver mines, or worked in them as a young man. The silver dust affects the skin, that's all. Don't stare anymore. Don't stare at anything here." We cut off the conversation when a knock came to my door. Trina answered it, returning a moment later with something wrapped in cloth. From it, she offered me an apple. It wasn't much, but I hadn't eaten anything for a full day, and dove at the fruit like it was the last of its kind. "Oh, thank you. Simon must have brought this. An unexpected kindness." Even more unexpected was the flutter within me. Was that for him? I ate it, every bit of the fruit that I could get. While I did, Trina worked at my hair, piling it on my head and using curling tongs for the loose ends. If she got it too hot and burned my hair, I'd have a second reason to see her hanged. "What do you know about Sir Basil?" she asked. I'd have ignored her, except that we needed something to talk about while she did my hair. Basil seemed like a safer topic than most others. "He's from Redingrad. Lord Endrick ordered a marriage between us years ago, but my mother protested because both of us were still too young. After she died, I told Lord Endrick I refused to go along with his plans. That's the real reason I was sent away. It never had anything to do with the kidnapping."
"So your father thinks you've agreed to the marriage?"
"It doesn't matter what he thinks." I shrugged with indifference. "In 3 more days, I'll have betrayed my kingdom. After that, I'll never be able to come back home. Basil wouldn't marry me then, even if I begged him to." She finished pressing another curl, letting it fall against my cheek.
"You could have let me take that whipping earlier. If our positions were reversed, that's what I would have done.
I know he's your father, so you won't want to hear what I have to say, but it's the truth.
He's evil, Kestra. As bad as Lord Endrick."
"Don't say that." Not because it was a lie, but because I feared it might be true. Now that I was home, the evidence of her words surrounded me.
"I understand how you feel," Trina said. "More than you might think."
"No, you don't.
You don't fit in here. We haven't been at Woodcourt for a day yet, and I can see that.
Please stop talking." I couldn't listen to her any longer.
"I never belonged anywhere either. Not until I joined the Korax."
Rather than answer her, which would have implied that I cared, I closed my eyes as she finished with my hair and the final details on my dress. It was still early for the supper, so I said, "Leave me alone now."
"Either Simon or I must be with you at all times."
"That's not possible, and you know it," I snapped. "Besides, you need to give Simon a message. You're expected to present yourselves to Gerald and give an accounting of any weapons you've brought into Woodcourt. If you delay any longer, it will arouse suspicions. But you might be searched, so don't bring anything else.
Such as his satchel?
That seemed to make sense to Trina, who hurried out the door. What I had said was true enough. Gerald would eventually ask for an accounting from these new servants, and that fact was very convenient for me. Immediately after she left, I dug into a chest of stockings, tying one around my right thigh as another garter. I didn't have a weapon for it yet, but I would, soon. Shortly after that, I left my room, following in the direction Trina would have gone. From a hiding place behind one of the carved stone pillars of Woodcourt, I spotted her talking to Simon in the stables. He grabbed his satchel, but she put her hand over his and said something, likely my warning about him being searched. He set it down again, surveyed the area, and then walked with her directly toward the spot where I was hidden. I had to counter their movements around the wide pillar, which was a trick because I didn't want my skirts to rustle or to flare out from behind the pillar. But it worked. They didn't see me.
"I don't trust this Gerald Bones,"
Simon muttered to Trina as they walked past.
"He looks at me with suspicion."
"He serves the Dallasors, and they serve Endrick," Trina said. "Of course we don't trust him."
Then they were past. I made certain they had gone and hurried over to Simon's satchel. There wasn't much time. He had left his sword here with his horse, covered with a saddle blanket. Gerald would have noticed it when we arrived. He would wonder why Simon had neglected to bring it for inspection, especially if he was supposed to be a protector. But Simon would have to explain that. I couldn't do it for him. I dug inside the satchel. Simon had a few silver coins that might buy him a day or two's worth of meals, a heavy gold ring he'd probably stolen, and a roll of fabric that could be used for bandages, or to bind hands, or for the gag Trina had wanted to use on me. He was also carrying a bound sketchbook and a lead pencil. A quick scan of his drawings impressed me, though most were only abstracts of an eye or hand. Nothing to tell me who had inspired the sketches. They were beautiful, though. A part of Simon I had not expected. In a different life, he might have been an artist, not an insurgent. I found nothing in the pages or in the satchel to identify him as a Korak, nor any means of contacting Tengger. Since I knew Trina carried nothing of her own, this was all they would have brought with them. It was true. Their lives were entirely dependent upon me keeping my agreement, just as Celia's and Darrow's were. But none of this was what I'd come to search for. That item was at the very bottom of Simon's satchel. It was the sack the Banished had brought to the inn, an item so small that I'd have missed it unless I'd been deliberately hunting for it. Inside the pouch was a silver key, too delicate for a door, or even the lock on a set of manacles. I knew Woodcourt well, and couldn't think of a single thing this key might be used for. More importantly, I couldn't think of any reason the Banished would want me to have it. I briefly recalled Thorne's words to Trina last night, that the Haldarians were coming for me again. Let them try. I was not the cowering little girl I'd been 3 years ago. If I could turn the tables on the Koraks, I could hold my own against the Banished, too. And I would begin by figuring out the purpose for this key. I folded the key and its sack inside my skirts as I hurried back to my room. There, I deposited them behind a loose wall panel in one corner. That cavity used to hide personal treasures and candies, relatively innocent things I didn't want to explain to my parents. Now, it hid something that I suspected people had risked their lives to protect. I wasn't alone much longer before Trina returned to my room. Her smile was so fake it might have been painted on.
"Were you here the whole time I was gone?"
If there was ever a time to play innocent, this was it.
"Where else would I go? Did you go to the stables?"
I bit down on my tongue, checking any expression of triumph. After seeing Gerald, she and Simon had gone back there together. He had searched his bag and realized the key was missing. He must be furious right now. Or, at least, I hoped he was.
"I'd get filthy in the stables."
I brushed off her accusation with a casual wave of my hand. "Mess up all the work you did for tonight. Why do you ask?" It was a question she couldn't answer. Simon had told me that the sack from the Haldarians contained nothing of importance, and if she asked me specifically about it, that would suggest it was important. She replied the only way she could. No reason. Someone mentioned they had seen you there. That's all. Nobody had seen me there. I wasn't foolish enough to allow that. She took time to fix a few loose curls of my hair, and it was far too soon before a knock came at my door. Was it time for the supper already? Hungry as I was, no food could taste good enough to counteract the bitterness of meeting someone I'd soon be forced to marry. You won't be here by then. That thought was poor comfort, but it was all I had. I had expected Gerald would escort me, but Simon poked his head inside. His attention instantly fixed on me, and a small smile escaped his lips before he corrected it. Gerald is attending to your father. I'll take you to the supper. Well, wouldn't he like that? 3 minutes longer that he could keep an eye on me. Lecture me. I walked beside him while we passed a couple of maids. But once we started down the steps, Simon paused on a landing and touched my arm, asking me to stop too. I know the plan, I hissed. Honestly. That's not it. He glanced around, ensuring we were alone. I just wanted to say about Trina. Well, that was a decent thing you did. I wasn't sure how to respond. Was this an attempt at kindness? Maybe he was confusing me with someone else, someone he didn't hate. Finally, I shrugged. I caused the problem. I couldn't let her take the blame. 6 years ago, you let John and me take the blame for that missing ring. Maybe I judged you too harshly. And if I have, then I'm sorry.
A beat passed.
I'm sorry things have to happen this way.
He stopped there, searching my eyes with his. What was he hoping to find in me? Goodness? Proof that he was right to apologize? Because if he was looking for anything redeemable, he'd be disappointed. I did accuse him and John that day. I was never going to put the Olden Blade in his hands, and I was part of the Dallasaur world, not his. None of that would ever change, unless it could change. Back. We had been friends once, in our way. If I had not set a torch to that friendship, things might have been very different now. If he had stayed on in our household, if we had grown up as friends, perhaps something more than friends? Maybe I'd be used to him looking at me with this intensity. Like he was memorizing the details of my face, and at the same time, scrambling my thoughts, softening the shell I'd built around me. If he was testing my courage, then I couldn't be the first to lower my eyes. He couldn't think or suspect or know how his gaze unnerved me, disarmed me. The depth in his eyes emptied me of my defenses. Protection I absolutely needed if I was going to survive this. If he was strong, then I had to be stronger. I held his gaze, determined to hide my every weakness, or to discover his. Our standoff only lasted a few seconds, though it felt much longer, and Simon was the first to blink. I started back down the steps saying, "We can't be late." He had been about to say something, probably to ask if I'd stolen anything from him recently. But with bustling noises below from the servants, we no longer had the privacy of the landing for such a conversation. He held out his arm for me to walk at his side. I also knew what that was. A polite excuse to keep me close enough for us to speak quietly.
"You clean up well,"
he said.
Your hair.
The compliment was awkward, but sincere. The fact that he had anything nice to say surprised me. Trina does better work than I'd have expected.
She's not as stupid as you've made her out to be.
He sighed.
Trina's had a difficult life, rejected nearly everywhere she's gone.
I snorted. Shocking news. He tried again.
All she wants is to do something important. You can understand how humiliating this must be.
Yes, Constantly threatening my life must be awful for her. Maybe you're offended because you like her. He paused, taken aback.
That's not true.
Isn't it? Then why are you ignoring her connection to the Banished? He stopped and released my arm, pulling me into an alcove near the main vestibule. A marble bust of Lord Endrick gazed down on us here. How appropriate. Simon said,
In the first place, I'm not ignoring anything. I just don't feel the need to share my deepest thoughts with the girl I'm
kidnapping? Whose life you're destroying? His eyes flashed. An honest reaction before he steadied himself again.
The girl who gave her word to cooperate with us. And in the second place, Trina is loyal to the Korax and so am I. There is nothing more between us.
I stared back at him. She might be loyal to the Korax, but not in the same way you are. As someone who is in the process of lying to nearly every face I see, trust me when I say that I can recognize it in someone else. Find out the truth about her, or she could put both our lives at risk. He licked his lips, then held out his arm again.
Worry about your own traitors, not mine. You were right before. I shouldn't make you late for that supper.
Chapter 17 Kestra.
Formal suppers were usually served in the Great Hall of Woodcourt. However, Gerald met us there and, with a polite bow, said,
Your father was unexpectedly called away by Lord Endrick. He sends his apologies and has ordered me to sit in on the supper in his place. We'll be in the small dining room.
So it's just the three of us? I asked. You, me, and this Basil person?
This person is Prince Basil V of Redingrad, son of King Albert and heir to the throne of Redingrad.
I grimaced. Can I just call him Basil?
Sir Basil is eager to meet you. Your father has told him all about you.
If he truly had, then Sir Basil wouldn't be at all eager to meet me. I'm sure everything he's been told is an exaggeration at best. Either that, or he's been forced here tonight as I have.
That's not the case, Lady Kestra, I assure you.
Gerald signaled to Simon, who bowed to dismiss himself.
As Kestra's protector, you're expected to stand watch at the supper.
He eyed me.
Unless the lady doesn't want you there.
I didn't. It's not necessary for him to come, I told Gerald. There won't be any trouble, I'm sure.
I'll come anyway,
Simon offered. Ever vigilant.
We can't take any risks involving you, my lady.
If Gerald had not been here, those words would have been the start of a glorious fight. As it was, I only took Gerald's arm, letting Simon trail behind us.
I remember you from your earliest years,
Gerald said as we walked. That cannot be true. No offense, Gerald, but if I had seen you before today, I would remember. He smiled.
No offense is taken. I know how I look. But I have worked here for many years. Most of that time was below ground, where you'd never have seen me.
Below ground meant the dungeons, I was sure. Nothing else at Woodcourt fit that description. I stole a glance at Simon, warning him not to walk so close. If Gerald were to recognize him from 6 years ago, that would be a disaster. Or it might make Gerald useful to the Korak plan. If he could be trusted, he might have some idea of where Risha's dagger was. I quickly dismissed that thought. Gerald would surely have been questioned, probably by Lord Endrick himself. And nobody could be trusted. Nobody.
What I meant to say, my lady, is that you have grown into an impressive young woman. If you ever need help, for any reason, then you can ask me.
I was in desperate need of help. But not from anyone who bowed to my father. Even if he meant well, Gerald's help could only sink me further into trouble. Whatever I had expected Sir Basil to be, it was not who I saw as I entered the intimate dining room. He stood when I entered, giving me a low bow, which I returned with a half-hearted curtsy. Like most people raised in the softer climes to the south, his hair was light blonde and hung in loose tousles from his head. He was tall and lean, near my age, and as far as I could tell, made entirely of fluff. He took my hand and gave it a kiss, though I quickly pulled away. He drew back, offended, but my sleeve was riding up on my wrist and I didn't want him to notice the wounds there. Hoping to cover, I said, "You make me blush, Sir Basil." What a stupid thing to say. I didn't blush, and it was simply fine manners for him to have kissed my hand. It was fortunate that I didn't care what he thought of me, because otherwise, I'd have cared deeply that I had just taken on the role of a simpering ninny. That was almost worse than being a traitor.
"You are more beautiful than your father described," Basil said.
Maybe that was because my father hadn't seen me for 3 years, and probably couldn't even remember what I looked like.
"She is beautiful, indeed," Gerald said. "Such striking eyes, wouldn't you agree?"
I'd always wished to have my mother's eyes rather than my own. Hers were kind and loving, eyes that radiated peace. Instead, my eyes had the look of trouble. Wasn't that what Lord Endrick had said?
"Shall we eat?"
Gerald politely gestured to our seats. The table in this room was small, though it was larger than the three of us needed, and certainly more elaborate than I'd been accustomed to for some time. Gerald took a seat at the head of the table. Then Basil pulled out a chair for me at the far end and chose the chair nearest to it for himself. As a protector would be expected to do, Simon stood against the wall directly behind me. Basil never gave him more than a passing glance, but as I turned back, I noticed Simon's full attention was fixed on Basil, much like a wolf observes a sheep. Plates were brought in piled high with candied plums, goat cheese, and rye bread. I was ravenously hungry and wanted more than anything to dive face first into the food. Darrow's training from the past 3 years echoed in my mind, however.
"Patience brings victory,"
he often said.
"Do not be in a rush."
He might have had different advice if he'd known I was starving. But as it was, all I could do was remember his words and know that I had the whole evening to eat as much as I wanted.
"Can we begin by agreeing this is awkward?"
Basil reached for my hand.
"We've just met, but it's already settled that we will be married."
I smiled insincerely and pulled my hand away to stuff a cube of cheese into my mouth. If he noticed, it didn't stop him from talking.
"We'll make our home in Redingrad, of course, though allowances will be made for you to visit your father as often as you might want."
"I haven't been here for 3 years," I said. "I didn't miss this place even once."
"Ah."
Well, now it was awkward.
"What sorts of activities do you enjoy?"
Basil asked.
"Sewing? Dancing?"
"Sword fighting? Riding horses? Occasionally shooting discs into hay bales dressed like anyone who had annoyed me that week, if I was in a bad enough mood." Of course, I didn't say any of that. I only nodded and ate another cube of cheese. He broke some bread and while eating pieces from it said,
"Let me tell you about myself then. I'm good with a staff."
I'd choose a sword over a staff any day. I preferred weapons with a pointy end. Darrow used to joke about that. Used to. I wondered if Darrow was still alive. If Celia had been rewarded for her treachery. Or if the Korax had decided she was no longer useful to them. It was increasingly difficult to tell the difference between innocents and enemies. Basil was still talking. I'd probably missed a few things on his list.
"I have a great deal of family money."
As did I. Which was merely luck on both our parts, not a character trait. Unless he did consider that a character trait, which would be another strike against him.
"And I'm kind."
He leaned forward.
"I'll be kind to you, Kestra. Always."
Behind me, Simon coughed, probably one he'd faked. He mumbled an apology, but it wasn't at all sincere. After the first course, a spiced pea soup was brought in. To his credit, Basil had excellent manners. A reminder of how relaxed Darrow had been with the proper training I should have received, while he was teaching me to drop from a tree onto a moving horse instead. No wonder I had driven Celia to betrayal. It was a miracle she hadn't done worse to me. As we ate, Basil told me all about his estate, our future home, which had been given to him by his father, the King of Redingrad. Basil would inherit the throne one day, though he anticipated that was many years away. His father was in excellent health and expected to live a long life, or something like that. I'd mostly quit listening by then. Midway through his monologue, I turned to Gerald. When do you think my father will be finished with his business for Lord Endrick? Gerald seemed surprised to have been remembered, and looked up from his soup.
My lady, I don't know.
Another hour, all evening, until tomorrow. In other words, if I got rid of Basil, would I have time to search the library?
With the Lord of the Dominion, anything is possible,
Gerald said. Then my attention went to Basil. What is your opinion of Lord Endrick? I suspected Sir Basil would have filled his cheeks with cheese cubes if it would have helped him get out of this change in the conversation. But the cheese tray was gone, and filling one's cheeks with soup didn't work in the same way.
I admire him greatly, of course,
he finally sputtered. Of course. And when you're on the throne of Redingrad, do you hope to be like him? Is that the reason for our marriage? For you to gain favor with Lord Endrick?
Kestra?
Gerald started. It's a fair question. I turned to Basil again. Why did you agree to this marriage? Basil leaned forward.
Why did you, my lady?
We stared at each other for a moment, and then we began to laugh. Nothing forced or fake, but a real laugh. Both of us conceding that we were only here because someone else had made it so. With that, the awkwardness dropped away and we enjoyed the rest of our meal with ease. In fact, the only time it became uncomfortable after that was when I caught a glimpse of Simon from the corner of my eye. He wasn't enjoying this meal at all. He was furious. Good.
Chapter 18. Simon. It's hard to know how long the supper went, but based on my growing impatience to finish the evening, I figured that I'd stood against the wall watching Basil and Kestra flirt for approximately 900 hours. When Gerald finally suggested they end the evening, I pulled Kestra's seat back before he'd even finished his sentence. "Your protector is anxious for his own night's sleep, I see," Basil said, laughing at me. He could laugh all he wanted. I wasn't letting go of Kestra's chair. "He knows I'm tired," Kestra said. "We arrived this morning from a difficult journey, and as you say, he's my protector, whether I like it or not." Basil stood when she did. This time, I noticed her hands deliberately clasped behind her back. With no hand to kiss, Basil gave Kestra a low bow, meeting her eyes when he rose again. A smile spread across his face as he surveyed her top to bottom. Briefly, I considered the consequences if I smacked that eager expression off his face. What was he doing? Appraising her as his future queen? As his wife? Basil didn't know her, not after just one supper and not when she was hiding so much. He had no right to look at her that way. I shifted my position to stand directly behind Kestra, making sure Basil saw me. I couldn't make Kestra leave, but the instant she took her first step, I would gladly escort her out the door. "I'm staying here in Highwind for a few days," Basil said. "Perhaps I can see you again before I return home." "Perhaps." Was that a flirtation? A way of teasing him into another visit? Or was she politely avoiding any further connection to him? I couldn't tell, which frustrated me to no end, but I hoped it was the latter. She was already being forced to commit treason against Antora. Her schedule was full. She curtsied to Basil and Gerald, then took my arm to walk out to the corridor. When I pulled her in another direction, away from her room, she huffed like a spoiled child. That was too bad. We needed to talk. "You're being ridiculous," she muttered. "You were ridiculous," I hissed. "Why didn't we bring in a priest and marry the two of you right there?" "You know why not. It's because in 3 days he won't have me for a scullery maid, much less a wife." "I thought you didn't want anything to do with him." "I don't.
but if I were going to be forced into marriage, I could do worse than him. At least he's kind. A word, I'm sure, that has never entered your vocabulary. I was plenty kind, just not to Dallasaurs. She would understand that, if she were anyone else. But she wasn't, and it was becoming far too easy to forget that. We paused for a couple of passing servants, and then I led her deep into the gardens, still blooming with late-season lilies and dogbane, that added a whiff of perfume to the evening air, a sweet contrast to the fight that was clearly coming. This late at night, nobody else should be out here. Still, we kept our voices low. I started. The person you met tonight is a fraud. Tell me you saw that too. I couldn't place exactly what was wrong with Basil, but something definitely was wrong. Was he too eager? Too friendly? Too irritating? As he tried in every possible way to get close to Kestra? The real Basil is different. You cannot trust him. I don't. Just as I don't trust Trina or Gerald or Celia or you. You don't have to like me, but you can trust me. I wanted to be clear on this point. Keep your word to the Korax, and I'll do everything I can to help you get through this. I'd meant well, but her cheeks turned to flame. Is this your idea of kindness? What I'm doing could destroy my family, perhaps the whole Dominion. The Dominion must be destroyed. You've seen the effects of their rule for yourself. Not this way. This is wrong. I gestured toward the center of Highwind. No. What is happening out there is wrong. You are not the victim here. Nor are you. For those years you worked here, we fed and clothed you, put a roof over your head, and paid you for your work. I only worked here because my father had died and the rest of my family was starving. I needed the money, which my father provided. But somehow we deserve this? Did I deserve this? I turned away from her, lifting my tunic just enough for her to see the scars on my back from where I had been whipped. On the darkest nights, I could still hear the whips crack against my flesh, the way I'd screamed for mercy until I realized begging only made the next hit harder. With the cold air bristling over my back now, I remembered the sting as if I were there again. It had been worse for my friend John. She drew in a sharp breath, then immediately fell silent. I lowered my tunic and turned back to her. The arrogance had faded from her expression, her shoulders had hunched, and she had become hauntingly still. Finally, she said, "You were the last one in my mother's room that day, and John supervised you there. I thought it had to be one of you." When she looked up, something was different. This wasn't a challenge or a trick. Her eyes had become windows, clear and unfiltered. This was the real Kestra. She continued, "It makes no difference, I know. But I've thought about that day 1,000 times since then, wishing I could go back. My mother's ring was found a week later in the cushions of her chair. By then, it was too late for John, and for you as well, I thought. I am so terribly sorry." I stepped closer, and was surprised that she didn't move away. John and I were sent to the dungeons, to be executed at the end of the week. I was in the lowest cell beneath Woodcourt, where all the sewage eventually collects, making the ground muddy. They warned me not to go toward the back of my cell, because if I slipped, I'd fall into an endless pit. The pit of eternal consequence. I must have looked confused, because Kestra added, "When I was young, that's what my governess called it." She described a pit beneath Woodcourt, where the spirits of all who had died in the dungeons roamed, eager to grab anyone who tried peeking over the edge. She threatened to toss me in if I didn't finish my lessons. The corner of my mouth lifted. Well, I haven't heard it called by that name. But the guards told me the story too, and I think some of them believed it, based on the smell alone. For 3 days I stayed as far from the pit as I could, but then I saw a rat headed toward the ledge. I followed it, intending to catch and eat it. The rat slipped into the pit, and I fell with it. Had I been less scrawny then, and on my feet instead of crawling, I probably would have died in the fall. Instead, I slid on my back, quite a long way down. My ankle was sprained, but I was alive. So there is a bottom to the pit. I thought back. Of course. It was awful, littered with bones and waste, and other odds and ends I'd wager prisoners threw down there so they couldn't be used as evidence against them.